Welcome to this episode of Landlord Almighty, your only podcast for detailed breakdowns of the George Lopez Show, episode by episode. I am one of your hosts, Kyle, joined by my other host, who's Loca for Lopez. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing quite well. I'm happy to finally talk some George Lopez.
I know. It seems like we never were able to. I'm pretty excited. So my wife is, like, super pregnant, and...
Is that a superpower? Super pregnant?
No, I think it's like the opposite of a superpower for women, unfortunately. But I never had any interest to, like, you know, people like want to feel a stomach or whatever. Like, that's it's weird. My kids, like current kids, like want to feel it. Current kids, like I'm gonna get rid of them, but they want to feel it, and it's like fucking weird. It's like some alien shit. Like, you can like see it moving around and like feel it. Why would anyone? Oh, it's gross. I don't want to say that. I'll say that to her because I think she agrees. But oh my god. But I just wanted to tell you that, Tim, because we have some bad news.
What's the bad news?
Tim, we did it. We did it again. Are not going to be able to talk about the episode of George Lopez when Carmen crazily redecorates a room. George and Annie intervene and order her to stop doing so. Carmen then argues that she should be able to do whatever she wants to her room since she is close to becoming an adult or she'll run away again. Upon hearing this, George decides to treat her as a tenant of the family and orders her to pay rent for his room, pay bills, and pay for her own food in an effort to discourage her from wanting to be treated like an adult. That was a long summary. We're not going to be able to talk about that episode of George Lopez today. We actually have a really good episode, one I'm really excited about. We're going to be talking about probably the biggest thing in Turtles right now, and one of my favorite Turtles creators ever, and creators in general. Glory's fucking awesome, but we're going to be talking to Sophie Campbell. How are you doing?
Hey, thanks for having me. Now I'm kind of bummed that you're not going to be talking about that show instead.
I know. Yeah, everyone always says that, and then I don't... no one ever actually wants to talk George Lopez, but...
Well, I feel like we all have that, like, you know, 20, 15 years ago when we were kids staying up late, like, just with the TV on, and George Lopez... The George Lopez Show was just always on.
I've never seen the George Lopez Show.
Oh, really? You are missing some mediocre TV. For sure. I've seen every episode. It is one of those things where I've seen every episode and I have no idea how I've seen them all. But, so, I mean, I mentioned, obviously, anyone who's reading Turtles, knows about your work in it, but like having you take over 101 was insanely exciting. But for you, taking over issue 1, the whole lead up to 100 was crazy, and then issue 100 was nuts and kind of the end of that. And I imagine you knew what was going to happen, but was that something, taking over that, obviously, kind of what you wanted to tell with the Turtles? Was there an adjustment for you, or was it kind of knowing ahead of time what they were doing? And then, because I feel like your storytelling is very unique to these characters. Like, you are all about building these people or these turtles as characters and as who they are, and that's kind of a different direction for what the book has done. They've done a good job of building everyone, but I feel like yours is very distinct. Was that something, knowing you were taking over 100, kind of what was going on? And then did you kind of always know at that point where you wanted to take them with this arc?
I didn't have, like, I'm trying to remember, because, like, when I signed on to do it, I hadn't read issue 100 yet. I don't think it was finished. So I'm trying to remember how the time frame went. But, like, I didn't know exactly what was going to happen. I knew, like, the broad strokes. Mm. But my initial pitch was pretty different than what we ended up doing. It was, like, a lot crazier, and there was, like, a giant monster, and there was, like, time travel and stuff. And, like, you know, stuff like... it. Yeah, like, I guess what I mean is, like, I didn't come to it with, like, this fully formed idea of what I wanted to do. And it kind of, like, you know, built somewhat off of what Tom was doing, because I didn't know exactly how it was going to end up. and also just like throwing in a bunch of stuff that I wanted to do into the pitch. And then as I found out more about how Tom was wrapping things up, you know, like I would alter some of the stuff that I was doing, and then, you know, talking with my editor Bobby and stuff, some of my some of my ideas would fall away, and I would like add new stuff. So I guess it was a pretty like fluid process, like right like at first. But I think my stuff tends to have that kind of like slice of life, character focused tone. So I think like regardless of what the particular ideas would be, that's what I would end up doing anyway, because that's just what I do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that sounds interesting, obviously, to hear like the giant like monster and time travel, because it, I mean, anyone who's familiar with like the Northampton arc, like this feels like a broader extension of that with Mutant Town and kind of a more focus on families. But I mean, it seems kind of in line, like you said, even stuff with like What Moon and even the Secret of the Ooze stuff, like seems like that. So like here there was like an idea that was even kind of bigger, seems crazy, but then this again, this like reads like Sophie Campbell to like the height, like it's amazing kind of like what you were able to do it and what they've kind of let you like just like run the show at this point.
Yes, yeah, I'm like, I didn't know what to expect exactly. And I feel kind of like, I don't know. I was predicting that they were going to like be like, hey, can we get like, you know, some more like plot stuff in there. And
who needs plot?
Yeah, it's kind of been the opposite, where whenever I try, I'll be like, oh, like we should, like, did you guys read Mirage Volume 2?
Which one?
The Turtles Volume 2, the with Terrapin, the giant turtle.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I was just like, oh, we should bring back Terrapin. That would be cool, right? So like, you know, I feel like right off the bat, I had this more plot heavy kind of like, okay, so Terrapin's there, and there's this time travel thing where the turtles from the future come in, they try to prevent blah, 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 you know, like all this stuff. And I feel like, I don't know if it's intentional, but it's ended up like all of my big plot stuff has kind of like fallen away and been stripped away, like as I work on the book, which I'm totally fine with, because that's the stuff I didn't think they were going to let me do, like the turtles like going to like a music show and stuff like that. You know, I thought it was going to be them pushing me into like, you know, like, hey, what about, you know, this particular villain, you know, like more plot stuff, but it hasn't been like that at all, which is cool.
Yeah, I mean, it seems really interesting that it's, I mean, obviously with like Mutant Town, like this is like ostensibly taking these turtles like away from everything they've done 100 issues previously, like it is essentially like almost like a volume two of this, where I mean, obviously spoilers if you haven't read, it's crazy, but you know, Splinter's dead, Rokusaki's like a not really a villain, but outside of that, like it's just like you drawing like sick ass mutants and like this like chill like hangout book, and it's like a lot of fun. And I mean, obviously there's like tense moments and there's like fights, but it's more on like a more grounded personal level, especially kind of like your like approach to like Hob and Sally and stuff. But like it's like really great, like again, it's just like pulling these turtles out of somewhere and putting them in like this other universe ostensibly, and just like kind of allowing you to do like what you do best.
It's been really fun, and I feel like I feel like I don't do well with like big plot stuff anyway, so I'm glad that like they haven't been like pushing for that. Like I get kind of stressed out when there's like, you know, when characters, when they have like schemes, you know, like an evil scheme or something, like I run into this when it I do a lot of like game mastering, you know, from tabletop stuff, and I feel like whenever I try to make a villain who has this like even moderately complex plan or whatever, you know, it starts like spinning out of control and getting like more and more convoluted, and it's like I'm playing whack-a-mole like with my own plot, trying to like plug up the plot holes as I go along so everything makes sense, and then I just I get really stressed out, and like, you know, I don't know, there's something about like the combination of like this like these convoluted plans like I'm talking about, and where things are like really urgent, like, okay, like Hob is gonna do this, we have to stop him, oh my god, you know, like that, and it stresses me out and I don't like it. So I end up just kind of like having much like smaller conflict, I guess. I think that's, you know, playing to my strengths. So I think it works out.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, that's like the comic book villain, like, to write that is like to write an extreme thing that, again, is often absent of reality. So like, that's really to like apply like a logical sense to it is difficult, because then you said you're going to be like, then you got like a Hickman book where you got 14 books to tell one story, because it all has to like tie together to tell this like insanely smart plot, when sometimes like just people want like Cobra Commander to drive a boat onto an island.
Yeah, totally. And like, I feel like Tom Waltz, he's so good at like, you know, like weaving everything together, and there's like 400 villains, you know, all doing their own thing, and like he juggles all this stuff. And like, when I came on the book, I was like, how am I gonna juggle all these characters? Like, you know, like where's Casey Jones? I don't know, you know, like this. Like, there's just so many characters, and they all have like their own kind of like little storylines, like, you know, like however small, they're all kind of there. And when they start having big plans and like, you know, like the foot, you know, they have like a team, like an evil team, they have all these goons who like have to do things also, and Karai has like these big Machiavellian schemes, it like really stresses me out. So yeah, and I don't know, for me, like, when I think of my favorite Turtles stuff is like, you know, the old Mirage comics. And I feel like even Mirage's like biggest story, like City at War, you know, it's like when City at War is done, it's done. And, you know, the Turtles, they go off and they do something else. Or like, you know, return to New York, like they kill Shredder, and then they have their whole lives ahead of them, or whatever.
Sophie, sorry to interrupt. Okay. I think Kyle dropped.
Oh shit.
So yeah, it says recording complete.
Oh. It says it's recording for me up at the top.
Oh really?
Yeah, I can. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you.
Okay, I think Tim dropped. He can use the same link to come back in.
Okay, in that case, I'm gonna pop out and then pop back in.
Okay.
Well, I think one of the interesting things, too, is, I mean, I think back to, like, one of my favorite issues is the Leonardo Micro with you. Is that Lynch? Which, I'm trying to remember. Blind Lynch. And, like, that feel, I love that one. I mean, obviously, because, like, the art and the kind of battle with, you know, a hidden Shredder, but that one felt like an old school, like, you know, Kevin and like a Mirage like issue. Like, that one was so like contained and kind of just like rooftop battle. Like, that was really interesting and fun. And I think, again, kind of what they've been doing storytelling wise is I think adapting more a lot of that, like, I think original term. I mean, I don't know if that's with maybe Kevin being so involved or involved to an extent, kind of what they've been able to do to really adapt it to, I think, comics, taking the best of every aspect of Turtles, whether it's the TV shows or the games or anything they do, and really kind of bring it to comics, but then use the medium specifically to tell that story. I think they've been able to use comics as a comic medium to tell a story, and less a like advertising avenue to sell more Turtles.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it doesn't have like the burden that a lot of like the shows and stuff have, where like they have to sell the toys to like keep going. And like, you know, like we're not pressured to have like toyetic kind of character designs and stuff.
Well, I think if there was an arc that had
toy, not that I would love toys. By the way,
I mean, that's what everyone in this arc in Mutant Towns, fuck it, like everyone looks so good. There's so many great characters. What are you kind of drawing from for the mutants? I know like you're a big like kaiju fan. Is that something like to be able to kind of play in that playground of these like designs for everyone being mutants, and like you kind of like this wide range of, you can like literally throw anyone in there? Do you have to get approvals? Like, is something you just kind of have free reign of like who you put in there as for like animal mutant characters?
Yeah, it's pretty free reign. Like, I make up a lot of that stuff in the first 5 issues, like as I was going along, you know, or some of the characters that, you know, some of like the kind of like featured, quote unquote featured extra mutants, like I would ask my friends like what their favorite animals were. You know, like a friend of mine would be like, oh, you know, I'm a sloth. So then I would make a sloth mutant, you know? So, you know, so the mutants wouldn't end up like really samey. But yeah, there's never been any pushback on like, oh, well, you know, you can't have this, you know, spider mutant in the background here or anything like that. It's just whatever. And it's really fun because like I've never like outside of Turtles, I never really drew like animal kind of characters, you know. And it's kind of like this whole totally new thing where I'm just drawing stuff I've never drawn before. Like, I've never drawn like a mutant, like a humanoid platypus or like a humanoid giraffe or anything like that. And it's just, you know, it's really fun, and it's nice to not have to draw humans all the time for once. Like, there's like a little more leeway, you know, like with a human I get more fussy because like they have to look a certain way or whatever. But if it's an animal character, there's a little more leeway.
Is there a pretty, I think with the character design, is there an ease to, for you to be able to kind of, I mean, obviously, like, you have the turtles as, like, the base design. They're turtles, but they have, you know, humanoid aspects. Is that ostensibly what you do with the character design, is, like, take an animal and then try to humanize it? And, I mean, it's kind of the best of both worlds, because obviously you're able to do all these crazy mutants, but also, I mean, you're able to then add emotion and feelings because you're able to do like the facial aspects and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, you can't normally do with an animal. It's difficult.
Yeah, I try to, one thing I try to think about a lot is like, cause like I feel like the tendency to, when you come up with a new mutant character, is to like make them kind of like realistic or something, you know, like, because the turtles themselves, and I guess in Splinter too, to some extent, like, you know, people have been drawing those characters for, like, decades at this point, and there's been, like, you know, refinement, and there's just a lot to, like, draw on with those characters, so I feel like the turtles are they're always going to kind of look the same. But when you create new characters, like, there's a tendency to be like with Koya, for example, you're like, oh, well, you know, she doesn't look, you know, she should look like a falcon. She should have these like realistic falcon qualities to her. But I feel like that's a mistake because like the turtles, they don't really look like turtles.
Right.
You know, they never have. And so I try to think about, like, when I design mutant characters, like, you know, the animal should be, like, mostly obvious as to what they are, but I try to think more about, like, what the idea of this animal is, you know, like, and whether, like, or, like, how to convey expression are the two most important things. Like, going back to Koya again, like, you know, she has, like, teeth, like, inside of her beak or whatever. And, you know, falcons, they don't have human teeth, but they help with expression. And turtles don't have human teeth either, but the Ninja Turtles do. So, why not? And one thing I always like, too, is in the old Palladium Ninja Turtles RPG that Kevin and Peter did all the art for, like, they would be really, they would, like, stylize, like, the hands and feet of a lot of their mutants. Like, you know, there'd be, like, a dog mutant, and they would have, like, you know, two fingers and a thumb, like the turtles have. Like, it's not realistic at all. Like, real turtles have five fingers, but they have claws and stuff, but it's like, I don't know. There's this, like, this stylization based on, like, the concept of what the animal is, like, when you think about it, before you look at any, like, you know, photos or, like, you know, anatomy references or anything like that. And I try to think about it like that, like, the idea of a falcon or the idea of a porcupine or something, like, whether it's, like, accurate or not, like, whether it's completely wrong, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, accurate to, like, what the real animal is in real life. So I try to think about it like that and prevent myself from, like, getting caught up with, like, anatomy and, like, oh, you know, I'm drawing this giraffe mutant, I better go research giraffes to see, like, what their eyes are like or whatever. But so, like, I try to prevent myself from doing that. I feel like it's, I don't know, it's not in the spirit of Ninja Turtles, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think the, like, there's the famous, you know, the first Turtles drawing, and that is a, like, you know, I mean, not accurate, but, like, a more accurate turtle, like, holding the nunchucks, and then obviously they simplified that to, like what you said, getting the idea of a turtle, but then creating that, like, famous silhouette, and, like, that's, I mean, like, going back to, like, you know, character design, like, the importance of being able to pull not only what that character is, but also, like, you know, what it's trying to convey as simple as possible, and then using that versus, like you said, kind of the over-detailed aspect, which, again, you kind of then lose what the importance of, you know, the story and the character is.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, I don't know, I personally kind of, you know, you kind of connect more with the characters when they're these stylized, like, basic concept kind of animals. But, like, as soon as, like, you know, if the turtles, if they looked like realistic, if they had, like, realistic turtle heads or whatever, you know, it's terrifying. And there's, you know, there's something charming where, there's something charming about them, like, having these bizarre three-fingered hands. You know, they're not human hands, they're not turtle hands, they're just something else entirely. And I try to approach it like that, where, like, anything goes, I guess.
Well, I think the cool thing is, I mean, I remember, you know, being, you know, a 6-year-old kid and being able, not well, but be able to generally draw a turtle, like a Ninja Turtle, and, like, my, you know, 5 and 6-year-old now, that's, like, one of the first things they like to draw and, like, sit and draw and, like, cut them out and make, like, action figures with it. And it's, like, just having that availability to, you know, kids or any generation is great versus, and even, like, you know, Batman, Spider-Man, they can draw those characters, but, you know, I don't know if they can draw, you know, like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of, like, a super detailed character. I mean, not Rorschach, but I don't know. But there's like there's the characters that have transcended with generations, and generally it goes down to like these base designs that kind of appeal but also are translatable to any person.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also just, you know, it's like what's fun to draw too, like in the moment. Like yeah, it's like I don't want to sit down and draw like a realistic animal anatomy type book type character. You know, I don't want to do that. So, yeah, sometimes this is like, all right, I'm going to give this character, like, you know, four fingers just because, you know, they're mutants. It's fine. And, yeah, it's just fun to draw. I think that's, like, that's the main thing at the end of the day. Like, what's fun? And I'm not going to, like, kill myself, like, when I have to draw it over and over.
Has there been one creation so far that you've enjoyed the most? I will say the bat with the sunglasses and jacket.
Oh yeah, that's actually that's an Easter egg from the old cartoon. Yeah. Because I was talking to there's this guy I know on Twitter who like he's like really into these like Bebop and Rocksteady's gang from like the old cartoon. I can't. God, what is it like? Scrag or something, like this is like the main guy, but anyway, so like, you know, they start off as people and then Shredder mutates them into animals, and like one guy is that bat with the shades, one guy is like a dog, one guy is like some kind of lizard or something with a mohawk, and so, and there's one character where you can't really tell what animal he is, so I got wrapped up with this guy trying to like figure out what animal this fourth character was. And so I ended up putting them in the comic as a joke, as a nod to those old cartoon characters. Yeah, so that's where that bat with the shades comes from. But I guess like I don't know who do I like drawing the best. Like in terms of like just like background characters or like anybody.
Well, I mean, I guess you can extend it to everyone. I mean, you've had a pretty big impact on Turtles, obviously, with the creation or the design of Jenica, and then, I mean, I think everyone's favorite, Pepperoni. But, like, I mean, is there a standout for you, I think, in your like, contributions to Turtles?
My favorite to draw is definitely Koya. Not because I have any particular affinity to like birds or anything, but just because I like her personality and it's fun to draw her facial expressions and stuff. Definitely, yeah, she's super fun, and I like drawing the weasels a lot. They're really fun. I'm trying to think of like the background characters and stuff. There was like an ant, like a mutant ant, in the background in like 104, 105.
Is he in the turtle? I know there was like a, I'm looking at it now, in the, when they're at the concert, I think.
Yeah,
like,
so, well, like first turtle, the ant.
An ant in a, like a sweater?
I can't remember what clothes the ant is wearing. Oh my gosh. Yeah, and at the concert, there's an ant. And then later on in the dojo scenes, I was just like, oh, I want to draw that ant again. So I just put the ant in like one of the, you know, karate classes or whatever. So I like drawing that ant. The shark in After the Bomb, the band. I like drawing her a lot. What else is cool?
I feel like if some people got turned into a shark and I got turned into an ant or like an armadillo. Well, armadillo would be useful, I guess. But
yeah, no, they're all, I mean, you know, ants are like super strong and
that's true.
You know, they have like a like an exoskeleton. That's pretty cool. And you know, it's like when you get mutated, everybody kind of like evens out to like a similar size or whatever. So it's not like you have to worry about like being really tiny.
Well, that would be a huge downside.
Yeah, it'd be cool to be an ant. I think I would like it.
Speaking of, I guess, of art, I was in prep. I was going through a lot of the stuff like Northampton, and I referenced the Leonardo Micro. But like looking back on that, and then kind of this current, like, 101 to 105 where you were doing the art. I mean, it's like a clear, obviously, I want to say, like, maybe evolution of kind of where you were from then. What has been, like, for you biggest, like, approach or change to your style from then? I noticed there's, like, a lot thicker lines in kind of the early stuff. Has there been a difference for you in your approach to maybe this run on Turtles? I even think Northampton was, like, a little different, like, over the years, or even, like, looking at Glory. Has there been anything different when your approach to kind of this current arc, or, like, your art approach?
I guess, like, looking back at Northampton, you know, I think, oh, wow, I drew the Turtles, like, super cute in that one. And I feel kind of like I started, like, swinging in the other direction. The Leonardo macro issue that I wrote and drew, was that 2018? I don't know. You know, like, the 40-page one-shot with Leo. I tried to kind of, like, you know, do more muscles and, like, scritchier line work and stuff like that. And I think my art for 101 to 105 is kind of like somewhere in the middle. Like, they're still cute, but, you know, I try to give them, like, some mass, and, you know, they can definitely go into that kind of, like, gritty, white-eyed ninja mode if they have to. I try to draw them taller. I don't know, just more bulk, I guess, with their bodies. And I try to make their shells look kind of hefty. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I try to make them look like a little more adult, I guess. It's like the main approach.
I think building on that, one of the interesting things you've done in it, I mean, obviously it's kind of just a progression of the story, but everyone kind of sheds, you know, the classic look. I mean, they're either wearing, like, scarves, or there's some, I think, signs to who's who, but I think you do put a lot of work into physically differentiating them, and then also, like, that's where kind of the character building comes in. Like, it's especially in, I think, like, 101 to maybe, like, 103, like, they're all pretty stripped down in terms of their look. So, which, again, like, take away their masks, they'll kind of look like turtles. But I think you had the challenge of, and I think you do it well, is, like, differentiate them in not only their styles, but their acting. Like, kind of, you're able to pick them out specifically. Was that, like, a goal early on to kind of strip them down and present more of a character thing? Or was it just, again, part of the story where, like, they had given up their masks and they were just kind of then put into a situation where they're wearing, like, clothes and kind of separated?
Well, I think it's both, like, you know, like, if they, when, like, the, in the story, you know, they're just kind of hanging around, I mean, except for Raph, I guess, but, like, you know, they're like, mostly hanging around the farmhouse, so they're gonna just be wearing normal clothes, and it's the winter, so they're gonna be cold, and I think differentiating them without their gear on is just kind of, like, an extension of that, like, you know, they all have the same kind of face, but they have, like, slightly different eyes, or, like, their snouts are slightly different. And, like, you know, body language is, like, a big thing. I definitely try to pay attention to that stuff. I'm not sure if that answers your question or not.
No, I think, and, like, again, I think in this series has done it as well, but, like, yeah, I mean, building everyone's personality out has been, I think, a huge, like, goal or byproduct of this series, is everyone's a, like, clear person, per se. Like, I mean, versus, like, you know, Michelangelo being the party dude and Raph being the one with attitude. Like, there's, like, building off that classic thing, like, everyone's a clear person, like, 105 issues in, which they should be. I mean, that's a lot of comics. So I think, like, your ability to kind of generate that personality in, again, their acting, their emoting, like, I think comes across again, which it feels like you said, I mean, I could see a comic where they were hanging out at the house, which, I mean, if you look at, like, the shows and stuff, they are, and they still have their mask on, they still have their gear, where, like, again, the more sensible thing would be them just hanging out in a shirt and sweater and stuff like that. But I think the fear would be then, like, I don't know, some people aren't gonna be able to tell which one is which, but, like, to then just, you know, accept that people understand the characters and stuff like that, I think is a risk, but also I think it pays off, because I think it's way more genuine and it reads, like, a whole lot better.
Yeah, thanks. And I feel like that kind of stuff always bugs me when, like, they're just hanging around and they're just, like, wearing their masks like it's an article of clothing for some reason. Or, yeah, it's, you know, and a lot, like, in the old Mirage stuff, like, you know, sometimes they would just be sitting around wearing their masks for no reason, but other times they wouldn't, and they, you know, they would be maskless, and I always thought that was cool. So I guess, like, just playing off that, like, you know, if they're gonna be, you know, quote unquote normal people, like, you know, it's cold outside, they're not gonna just sit around naked or whatever, and, you know, I feel like, you know, they're gonna have some degree of, like, their own wardrobe, you know, like, especially, like, living at the farmhouse, like, they probably, like, raided, you know, like, the O'Neill's closet or something, for sweaters and stuff like that, and, yeah, I don't know, I've never I see some fans talk about having a hard time telling them apart, but, like, I don't know, I've never felt like, even in Mirage, when it was, like, black and white, and the turtles, like, looked identical, it never, like, when the story needs you to know which turtle is which, you know, like, it'll let you know, but, like, a lot of times, like, you know, it's like a, you can, like, infer it through body language or something, but, like you were saying with the body language or whatever, but if you can't tell the turtles apart in a given scene, then it's probably not, like, super critical, mm-hmm. you know? And so, yeah, I try not to worry about stuff like that much. Like, when I'm drawing them, I know who they are. And, I mean, they have different skin tones in the IDW comics, so I feel like that's pretty a good tip-off. But, yeah.
Yeah, even, like, I think it was Mateus did the... He was big on... I mean, obviously, the masks are all different colors, but he was big on drawing everyone's mask with, like, a personality. I remember talking to him, and, like, you know, like, Raph's was cut edgier, and, like everyone's was, like, Michelangelo's was, like, thicker, and I don't remember, but, like, he went to, like, that was his whole, like, I will differentiate by the mask and stuff like that. But, like, I mean, especially in your story where they're kind of separate and making their way specifically, like, if because of the good storytelling and the way you lay out scenes, like, you should be able to infer or tell where the turtle is based on who's in the scene and kind of, you know, where they are in the panel. Like, it's pretty easy. And I think going to panel work, too, I think specifically in this, too, I enjoy it because it reads very cinematically. Is there a thought behind essentially kind of working in, like, a wide, like, panel format? I think most pages are, like, broken into, like, the four wide panels, and occasionally, like, you'll break one of those into, like, a double. But, like, pretty much I think most of it is, like, in, like, a wide, like, four-page format. I mean, and again, it reads, I think, more cinematically, and especially with, like you said, the slice of life type stuff, like, I think it reads better because you can get, like, crowd shots, or you can get them as together as a family. I think it works well. Is there a thought process behind that, or is it just kind of a comfortability thing, or?
I think it's mostly just, like, I don't know, like, when I thumbnail pages, it's just, like, I don't think about it too much, you know? It's just kind of, like, my gut instinct, like, when I'm doing it. And I think, like, the wide panel, especially for, like, a book like Turtles, where it's like you're gonna have like a bunch of characters in every panel for the most part. So like a wide panel is, you know, it's like the obvious, it's like the most efficient way to go to like fit characters who are like side by side. But I do think there's kind of like a serene quality to having like a lot of like wide panels, because you can like even if the character's in the middle, you know, and like that's where the action is, like on the sides, you know, you can get like more background stuff or, you know, like negative space, and there's, it kind of just lets it breathe a little more, in my opinion. And I feel like whenever I do like more vertical panels, I get frustrated, you know, because like you have to like vertical panels, it's like a really specific thing where like a character is like jumping, or you know, there's like this downward or like upward motion, and I feel like in like a lot of the stories that I tell, especially like what was going on in Turtles in that first arc, like there just isn't a lot of that, you know, so you don't really need it. You don't need those kind of like more dramatic. I mean, I guess the wide panel is kind of dramatic in its own way, but I don't know. It works for me, and it kind of has this like serene quality that I like.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at, like, you know, like I said, cinematic approach, like the like widescreen versus like full screen, like widescreen, there's so much more space to play with on the sides. A lot of times, like what's above and below is less, unless there's something super important to the story. But a lot of times, like having that space on the sides to breathe, but also kind of like playing with the 2/3 rule, like stuff like that. I think there's more to do horizontally than there is vertically a lot of times, especially kind of the way we read comics from like left to right, or if it was like manga right to left, like it's easier to do that way, I think.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes like I think having panels like predominantly horizontal, and then suddenly there'll be this kind of dramatic vertical panel, you know, like when something happens and there's this vertical. And, you know, I like that, where it's this kind of, like, jolt, where, like, all of a sudden you get this, like, severe kind of narrow vertical panel when something happens.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, especially with you, I think, like, great focus on the horizontal to then use that to, like, focus on, like, the eyes, especially, I think you do that a lot with the Turtles, which, again, like, very important, I think, with these guys.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's like there's the Turtles too. They have a lot of like, they have a lot of horizontal shapes on them. Like the mask goes, you know, straight across. Their belts go straight across, and it's just like, you know, just like, I don't know. It fits. Like they fit into the horizontal like really well.
So issue 101 to like 105 was you doing kind of the heavy lifting, writing and drawing and everything. So 106, which like when we're recording this came out, and then 107 is this week, right? I think. So you're doing kind of the bigger role, like you're doing like the story on that, when I think Rhonda and then Nelson Daniel, really great art on that one.
Yeah.
How is that role then, kind of pulling back and having people do the other stuff and you be kind of like the bigger, is that difficult, or is that like a different role for you? How is that aspect of this?
It's definitely something I've never done before. You know, kind of like a showrunner kind of position. Mm-hmm. Like I was a little frustrated at first, not because Rhonda and Nelson aren't great, but like, because, like, well, so what happened is like, I had, you know, like, I had all these plans that I wanted to do, and, like, the cliffhanger in number 105, that was originally just supposed to launch right into that story. And I had planned on just, like, doing the whole thing myself. And then it became clear, like, oh, like, maybe that's not going to work. Like, it's a lot of work, you know, writing and drawing a monthly book like that with, like, you know, you got to go through approvals and blah, blah, blah. And then we, the powers that be decided that they wanted to double ship Turtles over the summer, you know, like 2 issues a month. And
yeah, it's super easy to make.
Yeah. And, like, so when we were going to do that, I was like, oh, wow, that's, like, it's, like, you know, literally impossible for me to do it. So, you know, like, I'm gonna need help. So, you know, we brought, you know, Rhonda in and Nelson and, so they would be working on, like, this kind of 3-issue, like, interim thing with the Slithery. And while I'm kind of, like, getting ahead on the others, on the stuff that comes after, you know, like writing the next scripts and stuff like that. And then, you know, then the pandemic hit, and then we're like, oh, we're not doing the double shipping anymore. And now I have like, you know, like, what, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, I have like 4 extra issues that I'm just writing and not drawing, and it's just like, you know, completely different than what I thought it was going to be, which is, you know, it's working out well. It's really fun, but, like, it was definitely frustrating at first, you know, because, like, I had all these ideas that, like, well, like, you know, I want to draw that story, you know, like I want to draw the mutant eel monster and stuff like that. But it's also, you know, it turned out to be, like, really fun. Like, you know, I did, like, the outlines for the Slithery story, and, you know, it was fun to see, like, Rhonda interpret what I did and kind of, like, make it her own, I guess. Like, it's still, you know, like, I still wrote the story, but it's, like, there's enough Rhonda in there where I was, like, it was fun, like, being surprised when she would, like, turn in a script. You know, there'd be, like, some, you know, she's really good at these kind of, like little gags, you know? So she would put these little jokes in there that were not in my original outline, which I really enjoyed.
So it's not like the Mignola. I love reading those, like, the BPRD and, like, the, I was just reading the, what is it, the Witchfinder collection, and it's, like, the, where, you know, Mignola oversees all of those, and, like, in the backups they have, like, the sketches that maybe, like, say, like, James Herron did or something, and then you'll see, like, the Mignola one, and it's, like, draw it like I draw it, and, like, okay, buddy, like, it's, like, so you're able to, like, give the idea, but then they kind of have the reign of to, like, what they want to do within, like, kind of give it their voice, essentially.
Yeah, like, like, I think, because this was, like, Rhonda, she had done the backups in the Jenica mini, the 3-issue Jenica thing, and so she had, like, some writing experience, but I think she liked having, like, a little more, you know, because, like, originally I kind of had, like, a looser just, like, pitch, you know, that I, like, you know, because I have to submit, like, a proposal, you know, for every arc or for every issue, and it was looser at first, so I think I tried to write, like, a more detailed outline for her, and I think she appreciated that, because it was, like, her first kind of big-ish writing gig, you know, so she appreciated, like, the structure where she could kind of, like, springboard off it and do her own thing. And then, like, I did, like, a sketch for Nelson of, like, what the Slithery could look like my original idea. And he just kind of, you know, he did his own thing and just kind of springboarded off it. And for the most part, you know, I kind of stayed out of their way. And if I would jump in if, like, you know, like, Rhonda, like, asked for help about something like that, and, so yeah, it's definitely fun doing, like, kind of overseeing it, I guess.
With, and then being, I mean, so involved in, even, again, prior to kind of being the showrunner, essentially, on the book, and then now, but then someone you were had such a hand in of, like, you know, at least designing Jenica and kind of building her personality, to then, like, you know, see, like, a her own kind of miniseries with Bram Revell, which was great. I mean, how's that with someone then, like, even, like, again, Pepperoni is someone who's been, like, integrated into the comics and, like, that character. Is it, obviously, it's, you know, part of the Turtles, you know, property and brand. Is it something like having a character and then, like, having see other people, like, kind of adapt it and kind of tell their own stories with characters like you were so integral involved? Is that, like, cool, as especially, again, being a Turtles fan prior to then be, like, someone who's introducing these things where now other people are kind of, like, playing with those toys?
Yeah, there's definitely some kind of, like protectiveness, I guess. You know, like, I'll get really, like, fussy, you know, of, like, oh, you know, you're, like somebody else draws Koya or something, I'll be, like, really fussy about how it's done. But, you know, I really try to stay out of people's way and just, you know, because, like, I think about it in the terms of, like, I'm trying to think of, like, a character that, like, you know, Mateus designed, for example, or something that, like, I kind of put my own stamp on. But, like, I would be really ticked off if Mateus was just like, hey, Sophie, you're drawing this character wrong. Right. You know, can you make it a little more like this or something? And I know how that would make me feel, so I try never to be that person with other artists. And I think that's good. I think it's healthy to have, like, a little bit of distance, you know, so I don't just turn into this, like, psychotic control freak or something where, like, I have to make sure, like, you know, all the Turtles, like, I have to make sure all their clothes are correct when every artist draws them. You know, like, I don't want to be that person. And it's also, you know, it's fun seeing, like, other people bring themselves to it, like, even if it's not what I would do, and that's fine, you know, because it's, like, it's a group effort, and everybody, you know, brings themselves to it, and that's cool.
Yeah. Well, and too, I mean, and then you get, like, you can just get essentially more different stories. Because, I mean, I think the Jenica story was shades of kind of that, but then he kind of pursued, like, different aspects of it, and it was interesting and fun. And even the design, I think his is a lot slimmer. And he did a bunch of the leading up to 100. Like, I love Bram stuff, and, like,
yeah,
I saw a lot of comments about his art, and I was like, you guys are fucking nuts. This is so good.
Yeah, he's great. He did the What Is Ninja backups from Universe.
Oh, right, yes.
And that's, like, that was, like, a huge thing that I springboarded off of for Jenica. Just, like, you know, her being in prison or being, like, this criminal on the street, and being into, like, the music scene, which was, like, a big thing. I think Bram intended it to be, like, punk or whatever, but, like, I don't like punk, so I made it metal instead. Where it's, like, you know, you can't hear, I mean, it could be metal, you know, you don't know. So I'm pushing Jenica in that direction instead. I don't know what he thinks about that, but them's the breaks.
Yeah. And he's Canadian, so he's probably fine. He's very polite.
But, yeah, his stuff's great. Yeah, I love it.
He did that, Marvel Knights X-Men is, like, one of my all-time favorite things. Like, weird time when Marvel did like three Marvel Knights series that were all great.
I've never read that one.
Yeah, it's like a I think it's three or four issues, and it's just like Wolverine, Kitty Pryde, and Rogue go to this town where there's like a mutant sighting, and then like it's like this weird, like, it starts off like kind of like this weird horror story where they go there and there's something off with the town, and then there's like a mutant girl that can project things, and then like he starts bringing in like all these like classic like X-Men villains, and then like it's like this huge epic thing with this like town at the end, and it's like his art, but like there's like a lot of like bright colors, like pinks and kind of like what he did in Jenica, like it's a lot of that stuff, so it's really great. But and it's, speaking of other stuff, so doing some research, and it's something I had read before but I been reminded of when I was looking at stuff, the House of Mystery you did, was it The Hollow, right?
Yeah, is that what it was? I can't remember what it was called.
But
yeah, it was with the girl with the,
yeah, it was the hollows.
With the flies.
Yeah. And so, I mean, knowing, like, I mean, if anyone follows you on Twitter or any social media, like, again, you big into, like, kaiju and kind of horror and B-movies and stuff. And you haven't, I mean, is that something, obviously, hands busy with Turtles, like, again, apparently putting out like 14 issues a month or whatever they're having to do.
14 a month, yeah.
Is that something like down the road? I don't think, I mean, outside of The Hollow, I don't think you've really done like horror stuff. Like, is that something you could ever see yourself doing, or is there kind of a genre you haven't done in comics that you would want to try?
Well, I did a zombie book for Tokyo Pop. I think that's like closest. I think that's the closest. That's like pretty straight up horror, I guess.
Was that The Abandoned?
Yeah, The Abandoned.
Oh, what?
So I did that. I don't know. Yeah, it's like, you know, I love monsters and stuff, but like, I don't know why I've never done like just a monster book. Like, it's like whenever I sit down to do comics, it's like I just always end up doing these kind of slice of life things with like crying and stuff. Like, as opposed to, like, monsters. I don't know why. I do have a kaiju comic that I've been kind of tinkering with since 2004. Because, like, when I was pitching the Tokyo Pop, I did the Abandoned pitch, and I did this kaiju pitch. And they opted for zombies instead of monsters, and I shelved the monster book, and it's just been on the shelf ever since, and, like, every so often I'll go and, you know, write up new stuff for it, or I'll do sketches and stuff for it and then put it back on the shelf. Like, maybe, I don't know. Hopefully someday I'll just do a straight up monster book and it'll be cool. I think if I did, I don't know what I would do now if I did like a horror book. Maybe like something with like body horror, you know, like people like having their bodies transform against their will in some way. Something like that. I've always kind of wanted to do like a slasher book, but again, that's also not monsters. I don't know.
Did you do an issue or so of Hack and Slash? Was that?
I did like two pages of Hack and Slash. There was some, I did like the, God, I can't remember what issue that was for, or like why I only did a couple of pages. It was some like bookend, you know, where like the character, she's like driving on the road at night or something, and it leads into this other story. I don't know. But yeah, it was only a couple pages for a hack slash. I did other covers for that. But yeah, I never did like a full Hack Slash thing.
Well, even with books like the success of like what's that, Kaiju Max, like you could easily do like a kaiju crying book. I think there's like tons of crying in Kaiju Max.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, I don't know why I've never done it. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it's just one of those things where I think, you know, like other things get in the way and stuff gets derailed and. I don't know. Maybe next year.
So, I mean, again, you've done a lot of interviews, but I think that I would end on the typical before we go into Tim's question. But, like, I think anyone's that's read it so far, like you said, I think issue 105 ends on that kind of cliffhanger again, spoilers, because, I mean, issue 6 and 107 will be out when this is posted. There's, like, an aspect of time travel, which, again, looks awesome and looks like a... I love that design because it looks like straight out of that Secret of the Ooze you were doing. So good. What can you bare minimum tease going forward, at least for this series?
Oh boy. The way the messed up scheduling like ended up happening, like that storyline won't get followed up until like 113, like issue 113, which is the arc, my next arc that I'll be drawing and writing. I don't know, what can I say? Yeah, there's time travel, it's Lita from the future. I don't know what I can say that isn't spoilery.
Yeah, I thought you did a pretty good job of showing that it was Lita, but
yeah, because
I heard people like what is that? I was like, I'm pretty sure that's Lita, but
yeah, I thought it was hopefully like, yeah, I guess hopefully obvious, because like, you know, what other albino turtles are there out there? But yeah, I mean, if people didn't know it was Lita, that's fine too. I think it's still like a kind of like what the hell moment at the end. I'm trying to think of stuff I can, like, there's gonna be, trying to think of stuff I can tell you that, like, won't get in trouble.
I don't know, it's not like there's, like, a major corporation behind it that has...
I got a couple classic characters coming in my next arc. I can't tell you, but they're pretty good. It's gonna be more music stuff.
I was trying to figure out at this point like, who they haven't really used. Like, they're so good at pulling like even the like some of the obscure stuff from history at this point. Like, they're...
No, there's definitely like it would be really fun to do a Muckman story. That would be pretty cool.
They haven't used Muckman.
No, there's no Muckman. I always liked Radical and Complete Carnage, but they're kind of like superhero-y, so I don't know if that would really fit.
That's true.
Terrapin, like I was saying at the beginning. A giant turtle.
They did what's that? In the 2012 show, they like kind of adapted that with, I think it was, they made him Toka.
Yeah, like Toka was some kind of like big space turtle or something.
Yeah, that, yeah. Me and my kid just went through that series. It's so good.
But yeah, there are some other ones that I can think of, but if I say them, you'll know that that's what's going to happen.
I will let Tim get his final question.
All right, Sophie, gun to your head. If you were forced to write one episode of The Big Bang Theory, what would happen?
I don't know. I've never seen it. What is that? That's like that nerd show or something?
Yeah.
I don't know who the characters are or what the setting is or whatever, but I guess I would have... a shark involved somehow.
they could go to a aquarium. I think they're in, is that on the West Coast? I don't know. We're not even that good at experts on, so
yeah, we don't really know too much
either. They could go to the ocean, there's a shark, or they could just like walk around a corner and there's just a shark on the sidewalk. There's like any number of things that could happen.
Yeah, well, I think they work at like some some, I think it's like a university or something. So there can be like a, someone's doing an experiment and they make a shark person and then it
or
kills everybody.
They go to class and the new professor is a shark. Oh.
Just a shark. That would even better if it was just a shark, not even like a shark person, just like a
yeah,
shark.
Just a shark, right. And there's like a shark. It wears like a shark shark shaped suit, like a jacket, you know, like a professional looking teacher outfit, but it's a shark.
So, if anyone wanted to tell you their thoughts on your Turtles run, or if they wanted to find your stuff or get a hold of you, what would be the best way they could do that?
Twitter is always the best. I'm not like super active on Twitter, but if you message me there, I'll see it. That's definitely the best place to get a hold of me.
I think that is it's at
Mooncalf
1.
Yeah.
What was that? Oh, I was gonna.
That's your only question? That was the question?
Yeah, I'm just kind of here as, you know, the sidekick, in case Kyle stumbles a bit or anything.
Do you ask everybody the same Big Bang question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel bad that, like, I feel like I'm supposed to have some kind of cultural like, I know that everybody hates it. That's the only thing I know about it.
Yeah, a lot of the answers are people just want to kill the characters.
Oh, that's boring. That's not fun.
Yeah. Well, let's see. I think that's the interesting thing now. It's been, you can either tell, like, right away, it will be like, oh, I do something where they all die. Or you'll see someone, like, go, and then they'll expand on it. And then again, there's people. Anyway, we don't know. We know very little about it. I know more from my just like watching YouTube documentaries about like toxic geek allergy. I don't know. It was like I've watched things about like how the show like is like awful for like creating like a toxic personality of like geeks and all that show. I don't know. I just know it's like the show my mom thinks again that she knows what I do. Because I read comics and she's seen the Big Bang Theory. So it must be like, not Sheldon, whatever the other one is.
Leonard.
Leonard. Yeah. But yeah, Tim, well, and then we used to, when it was just me struggling through like the first like 120 episodes I did, and I said I couldn't do it anymore and I needed someone to at least sit here with me. I used to ask, what was better, Ghostbusters 1 or Ghostbusters 2? And that was a probably more laughable question because no one ever sided with me on Ghostbusters 2. So
they're both bad.
Bad?
That's my answer to that.
That's a different answer, but
the most controversial answer.
No, I don't know. Ghostbusters sucks, man. It's just like,
well, it sounds like you're not going to get any Ghostbusters books at IDW.
No, it's like, I'm sure those comics are fine, but like in the movies, like Bill Murray, he's just so gross in those movies. Like, I don't get it.
They're
like,
very problematic. I've watched them now with I got a 5 and a 6 year old, and like they. Not that exciting for kids, which, again, like, I remember loving it as a kid, but one, it was I watched 2, which is a lot funner, and also I watched the cartoon, and the cartoon's, like, cool as shit, but, like, we watched it, and, like,
the first one's kind of scary. Like, there's parts in the first one that I like, Gozer is really cool, like, the dogs, the monster dogs are cool, Rick Moranis is hilarious, but, like, Bill Murray, he just kills it. He just, like, stops that movie dead. And, like, I don't get it. Like, he's not... He's not funny. He's not charming. He's just, like, a giant little boy. He looks like a man. And I hate it. I hate it.
It's essentially sexually assaulting people in that movie.
And then, like, in the second one, like Ernie Hudson, he just disappears for half the movie, and he's the best one.
I tried to get Ernie Hudson on the show. He said, well, his publicist politely said, no, we will not do that. But what can you do?
Anyway, and then, oh man, the third Ghostbusters, it was terrible.
Oh, the all-female one?
Yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah, it was not good. But Ghostbusters, what was it, Extreme Ghostbusters, is just as bad. But
I'm so not well-versed in Ghostbusters as you, Kyle.
I don't even know. Like, yeah, again, I asked that question because, like, in, like, episode 3, I got in an argument with, not an argument, like, but somebody was arguing with me about it, and then, like, indignantly, I just kept asking that question. same reason we do a George Lopez intro now, because I don't know, I hate doing intros, so I just thought we better do something dumb. But, yeah, if anything, it's just, we just need more Bobby Brown, except less Bobby Brown, because he's awful, too, but that song is so good. But, Tim, if they wanted to find you outside of your sitting here for an hour and asking the one question at the end, how
they find you? I write over at Comics Pit, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Tim Madura.
And again, if you've listened to the show, you probably know where to find us. That'd be weird if you didn't. But we are on Twitter at pages_panels. And we have a website. Everything's on there. You have a website, the Patreon, all that stuff. I usually cut in commercials so I don't have to bore whoever our guest is with that nonsense, because nobody wants to listen to that. I don't even want to listen to it, but it's bad because we're supposed to be promoting it. I think the bigger thing would be go out and buy Turtles, anything with, well, any Turtles, but anything with Sophie on it. I don't know, go get Glory, because that's one of the best fucking books ever. It's in hardcover. It's beautiful. I don't know, anything Sophie's done, but I don't know. Obviously the big thing is to get Turtles, and again, a huge thanks for coming on and talking with us. And
yeah, thanks for having me. No, it was cool.
All right, and that will be this episode. And then next time, me and Tim, we will get back to talking about George Lopez. You know, we're like 29 episodes in. We haven't been able to get
to it. It's about time.
I know. One of these days, we're going to have a guest week, and we're going to be in real trouble. We have to actually talk about it. But that's not this week or next week, so we'll have to. But thanks for listening. All right, I'll stop recording.
Bazinga. Bazinga! Hugging is the